So quick to choose the path walked by the righteous, so you can go and nest among the weak. The innocent observers will refuse to find the lie within. Renew the disappointment of the meek.
Chapter 2. Stiles snoozes in the passenger seat while Peter goes into the motel and gets them a room. He's yawning as they head inside. Peter wonders if he should tell him to brush his teeth or something like that. His parenting skills aren't exactly well developed. Then he realizes he doesn't have a toothbrush, so there's no point in worrying about it. Stiles crawls into one of the beds and is asleep a minute later. Peter sleeps restlessly, and he's up at dawn. He pulls out his laptop to check the news. As expected, Stiles' disappearance is big news, featured on almost all the California stations. Either Laura has reported him or someone else noticed, because Peter is listed as being the last person that Stiles was seen with. It could be worse, though. It's not really nationwide news, and the Los Angeles Times has already bumped them because of a shooting earlier that morning. CNN has an article on it, but it's halfway down the page. They're not trending on social media. It's also not a good picture of him. It's older, from when he was clean-shaven and had longer hair. The picture of Stiles is new, though. Probably his school photo from the most recent year. When Stiles wakes up, Peter tells him to stay in the hotel room while he goes out and picks up a few things, including some food. Stiles nods and doesn't say much in reply. Peter goes out to the truck and drives to a nearby Walmart. He grabs some basic toiletries for Stiles and then some food that will last them for a few days. He also gets a pair of scissors, some hair dye, and some tanning lotion. After a quick scan of the offerings, he grabs some pants and a polo shirt for Stiles, since the newspaper had described the clothes he was last seen in. He also picks up a prepaid cell phone. He leaves the truck at the store after wiping it down to erase their prints, then walks back to the hotel. Stiles' stomach is growling, and he perks up when Peter tears open a package of pastries and hands him one. While he eats, Peter starts sorting through the bags he brought back to the hotel. "All right, let's review the lesson I gave you yesterday," he says. "How many types of werewolves are there?" "3, Stiles responds promptly, with his mouth full. "Name them. Alpha, Beta, Omega." "What is the..." Without finishing the question, Peter whips a walnut at Stiles. It smacks him in the cheek, hard enough to sting. Stiles lets out a yelp. "Ow! What was that for?" Peter walks over and takes Stiles' chin in his hands, making Stiles meet his gaze. "You always have to be on guard against attack," he says. "Every minute, every day of the rest of your life, you will have to keep your guard up. You want to hunt hunters. There are few things more dangerous than that. You have to always be prepared for an attack." Stiles nods and Peter lets him go. He sits down on the bed across from Stiles. "I'll teach you as much as I can, but there are no guarantees," he says. "I want you to think about that, and I'll make you a promise. Up until the moment of no return, the first time we actually make a move, which will be several years from now, you can change your mind, decide you want to go back to a normal life. Say the word, and I'll drop you off at the nearest police station, and they can take you home. But once we make our first move, there's no going back. Do you understand?" Another nod, and then Stiles says, "Thanks." Peter nods and gets up, going back to what he was doing. "What are a werewolf's main weaknesses?" "Wolfsbane, silver, electricity, and, fire." Stiles sneaks a glance at Peter, unsure if he'll be upset by talking about this. Peter isn't. He continues quizzing Stiles until he's finished eating, then has him sit down in the bathroom. Peter's not much of a stylist, so he goes with the utilitarian buzz cut. Stiles rubs a hand over his head once it's done and says, "It feels weird. You'll get used to it." Peter takes out the packages of hair dye. An hour later, they're both considerably tanner and black-haired. It works better on Peter than it does on Styles. He glances at his watch and sees that it's getting towards the time they need to check out. Styles puts on his new clothes and they gather their things in silence. "Where's the car?" Styles asks, looking around the parking lot.
"Somewhere that it won't be noticed for a while," Peter says.
He hands Styles a baseball bat and a pair of sunglasses. When Styles puts it on backwards, he says,
"No, the other way. We need it to hide your face."
"Oh, right. Okay." Styles fixes the baseball cap. "So where are we going?"
"Light rail station,"
Peter says, gesturing to the one down the road.
"It's going to be a long trip, and I'm going to be focusing on making sure nobody is looking at us too hard, so you'll have to keep yourself entertained."
Styles nods. "Can I play on your phone?" Peter glances over at him, amused.
"It won't do you any good. It's just a burner, and I've turned off the Wi-Fi to keep it from being tracked."
"I know," Styles says, "but someone my age on a long train ride not staring at their phone looks weird."
"You know, you have a point there," Peter says.
He takes out his phone and hands it over. A few minutes later, the train arrives. Peter lets Styles have the window, and he's dutifully tapping and swiping at the phone, even though all he's doing is surfing through the menus. They're on the train for nearly 2 hours before they come out in Long Beach, and he relaxes a little. They've left behind the truck, the last piece of evidence tying him to Beacon Hills. He didn't register it at the motel, so nobody should be able to connect his current fake ID to the Los Angeles suburb they had stayed in. He can't quite breathe a sigh of relief yet, but he thinks they're probably safe, at least for now. Once they're off the train, he finds a quiet corner at the station to make a few phone calls about getting some new identities set up. Styles dutifully stays close to him while he visits some of his contacts, while he quickly surfs Craigslist and gets them some wheels. By the time the sun is setting, they're on the freeway heading east.
"Where are we going?" Styles asks.
Peter shrugs a little.
"I'd like to get as far as Phoenix tonight. After that, well, where do you think we should go?"
Styles thinks about that. "Somewhere that people won't notice us. That means a city, right?"
Peter nods. "Cities are always better for blending in. Small towns, people are nosy. They notice newcomers and ask questions. In cities, people neither know nor care to know. They're neighbors. We will never stay more than one night anywhere that has fewer than 250,000 people."
"Is that a lot of places?" Styles says. "Or are we going to be moving around between the same 10 cities forever?"
"Oh no, it's got to be at least 50. Although I don't know how many off the top of my head."
Styles chews on his lower lip. "I could look it up if you get me a phone that has internet."
"Not until we're settled somewhere and I have our fake identities firmly in hand. Then it'll be safe to get a smartphone."
"Okay." Styles fidgets for another few minutes. "How long will that be?"
"A few days."
Peter glances at him and arches an eyebrow.
"Bored?"
"Yeah, I guess." Styles looks out the window, so he doesn't have to look at Peter.
"Sometimes I fidget a lot and have trouble concentrating. They put me on medicine for it. I guess it helped, but I don't want to need it."
"Ah," Peter says.
"Well, in the long term, I can see if I can acquire some, but it won't be feasible in the near future, so you're going to have to go without."
"That's okay." Styles actually seems cheered up by the fact that Peter took this in stride and didn't immediately label him as broken in some fashion. "You know where we should go? Albuquerque. I've always wanted to go to Albuquerque since I saw it written down. It just seems like a fun place to go."
Amused, Peter says, "I think Albuquerque is a fine choice."
"Have you ever been there?"
"No, but that's good. We don't want to go anywhere that I've been before, where people might think to look for me."
"Does that rule out a lot of places?"
Peter gives a slight shrug. "A lot of the West Coast, plus a couple big cities out east, Miami and New York. Plus I did a semester abroad in Italy, But to be honest, I don't know if Laura even knows that. He goes quiet without thinking about it. Everyone who knows me well enough to predict where I might go is gone. Styles folds his arms over his stomach, folding inward slightly. That sucks. Yes, it does, Peter agrees. He clears his throat and continues. But in terms of staying on the run, it's a good thing. We can go pretty much anywhere. The world is our oyster. Gross, Styles says, and Peter gives a snort of laughter. They talk on and off about werewolves and other supernatural creatures during the drive. Styles fidgets, but manages to keep himself contained. It's getting late by the time they get to Phoenix. Peter gets them a hotel room and does a quick patrol around the building, but he doesn't see anything unusual or smell any danger. He orders them some Chinese food, and Styles eats hungrily. Peter's a night owl, but he knows that he can't expect that of a 10-year-old. He only needs about 6 hours of sleep a night, and he's sure that a child will need more. He wishes, suddenly, that he had spent more time with his sisters and their children. He might feel more qualified to do this. It had never occurred to him that he would be raising a child without them peering over his shoulder, judging him on everything he was doing. His mind wanders to Olivia, to her curved belly, and the scent of the new life growing inside her, and feels a howl of grief start to build in his throat. He wrenches his thoughts back to other topics. Styles watches TV for a little while, channel surfing, and falls asleep with it still on. That answers Peter's question about whether or not keeping a light on or the noise of his typing will bother him. He turns the TV off and then pulls the blankets up over Styles. A few hours later, he goes to bed himself. He hasn't been sleeping well since the fire, and he's still tossing and turning as the hour grows later. He figures that Styles is long since asleep, and he's thinking about getting up for a while. But then he hears a suspicious snuffle from the bed next to him. He waits for a moment, but then hears a stifled sob. Peter sits up at that and reaches out to turn the light on. As soon as it turns on, Styles rolls over so he's not facing Peter, choking down a few more sobs. I'm okay, he says, before Peter can say anything. That seems unlikely, Peter says. I'm fine, Styles insists. Peter gets out of bed and walks around to where Styles is facing, sitting down on the edge of it so he's facing the wall. You know that you have every right to not be fine, right? He says. There are certainly ways your situation could be worse, but you've lost both your parents along with any hint of familiarity in your life. Styles swallows hard, his Adam's apple bobbing visibly. I have to be strong, he manages. I don't want you to think that I'm not, that I can't handle myself. I see. Peter lets that sit for a moment. What makes you think that strong people aren't allowed to grieve? You aren't wasting time crying, Styles says. Oh, on the contrary, Peter says, a little amused despite himself. This morning, before you were up, I went to take a shower. I sat in that shower stall and cried my eyes out for at least 10 minutes, probably longer. I cried so hard that I nearly threw up. You did? Styles sits up and finally looks at Peter, wiping his eyes. Yes, and I have every morning since the fire. Styles hesitates a moment. But if you cry in the shower, it's because you don't want anyone to see you cry. You think it makes you look weak, too. I have to admit that I dislike people seeing me that way, Peter says. But you don't have to hide it if you don't want to. Crying doesn't make you weak. Strength isn't about not caring or not showing your emotion. It's about the fact that you keep going even when you're sad or angry or in pain. You keep getting up every morning, keep doing whatever it is you've decided will help. But if you need to cry every now and then, that's fine. Styles snuffles a little more, then says, Okay. Thanks, Peter. Get some sleep, little cricket, Peter says. Stiles lays back down, so Peter draws the blankets up over him, and Stiles closes his eyes. Peter turns out the light and then gets back into bed. He falls asleep, listening to Stiles breathe. Stiles is quiet the next day, and Peter lets him have his thoughts. He's never exactly been a chatty person himself, and although he suspects from the way Stiles had questioned him in the forest that reticence isn't his forte, he doesn't want to push him. They check into the extended stay motel in Albuquerque. Stiles watches Peter give the clerk an inoffensive smile and talk about their move from Phoenix and how he'd gotten a better job here. She looks uninterested and gives them their room keys. How do you feel about pizza for dinner? Stiles shrugs a little and says, It's fine, I guess. I never ate much of it. My dad wasn't supposed to have fatty foods like that. He folds his arms over his stomach and sinks into a chair, his voice trembling a little. I wish I'd let him eat more of it, if he was just gonna get shot and die. Peter's not sure what to say to that, so he just replies, Werewolves don't have to worry about things like that, fortunately. Stiles nods and pulls his knees up to his chest, lapsing back into silence. It's not until they've gotten the pizza and they're both finished eating that Stiles says, Why did you bring me with you? Hmm? Peter asks, unsure of what Stiles means by the question. Stiles shifts a little, fidgeting. You want to kill hunters, right? Peter nods. I do. So why bring me with you? Why train me? You said it might be years before we make the first move, but you don't have to do that. You could start doing it right now. I could, Peter agrees. Although, to be honest, I'd probably still want 6 months or so to get in shape for it. But it would be a bad idea. For one thing, my identity would be completely obvious. Remember always that hunters are a community. They talk to each other. They share information. If they start dying or disappearing right after I survived my family being killed... Does it matter? Stiles asks, sounding curious. I mean, you're not the only one who survived. Derek and Laura did too. That's true, Peter says. But I have something of a reputation. Oh, yeah? Stiles sounds impressed. Were you already a hitman or something? Amused, Peter says. Not exactly. I was a private investigator and a fixer. Do you know what that is? He adds, and Stiles shakes his head. A fixer is someone who works to make problems disappear. I specialized in blackmail and extortion, but I admit I've killed a few people. Stiles glances sideways at him. Bad people? Horrific. Okay. Stiles chews on a fingernail. But still, even if they know it's you, what does it matter? You won't be using your real identity. No, I won't, Peter says. But Laura and Derek will. And every single hunter I've ever met would be happy to use them against me. Oh. Stiles mulls this over for a long minute. You could still wait 6 months or a year. You don't have to wait until I'm old enough. But it was your idea, Peter says. That would hardly be fair. Stiles rolls his eyes. Oh, yeah, I'm sure revenge wouldn't have occurred to you. Of course it would have, but I can't have revenge. The person who killed my family is dead. Peter gives a one-sided shrug. You have a sense of justice that I simply don't. To you, the logic seems simple. To me, not so much. I guess, Stiles still sounds skeptical. Peter sits in silence for several long minutes. It's none of Stiles' business, but for some reason he finds himself saying it out loud. My wife, Olivia, she was pregnant. At this, Stiles' eyes go wide. Oh, geez, I'm really sorry, Peter. Peter nods, accepting his condolences. I suppose to me it seemed like fate. That I should meet you and feel a connection to you, to your goals, just after I lost the child we could have had. Maybe it isn't. I'm not sure either of us believes in fate. As you said, the universe is a random, arbitrary place. Things happen for no reason all the time. But perhaps that means that, although the universe is often cruel, sometimes it's kind.
Styles snuffles a little and wipes tears off his cheeks, then chokes out,
"Okay."
"Come," Peter says, wanting to change the subject. "Let's see if we can find a movie on TV, and then get some sleep. Tomorrow, we'll start your training."